And they, I hope you noticed, mantras were filled with names of the personality of Godhead. Those are the auspicious, transcendentally auspicious mantras. And within the teaching of Rupa Goswami, we find that there are five most auspicious activities in devotional service. Right, boys? Is that right? Huh? See you later. And we're honoring one of them today, the worshipping of the deity form of the Lord. And, of course, chanting of the holy name, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, serving the devotees of the Lord. And what's the other one? Living in Seattle, right? Or making your home a sacred place, whether it's in Seattle or Issaquah or Sammamish or wherever you may be. Making your home a sacred place and then residing in that sacred place. When in 1966, when Srila Prabhupada was writing, he wanted to establish in a formal way so that the government would recognize the organization that he was planning to establish worldwide, ISKCON. So the first branch was in New York. So he invited a lawyer to advise him how to do it, make a legal instrument that whereby the government would recognize ISKCON. So the procedure was to establish a corporation within the state of New York. And to establish a corporation, one of the things that you have to do is state the purposes of your organization. Because Prabhupada was planning to establish the type of organization, a religious organization, just because there's so many different types. So the purposes of the organization have to conform with the state statutes that say a religious organization can do these things. And if it matches, then the government will accept. So Prabhupada created purposes for ISKCON, and he listed seven of them. And one of those seven, listen carefully, was to establish places of pastimes of Krishna. Question: how do you do that? Or, I thought Krishna establishes places of pastimes by Krishna appearing and Krishna performing pastimes. Just like, you know, in America, George Washington slept here. Mm-hmm. They have like a place. Or in Baltimore, Edgar Allan Poe lived in Baltimore. Or something. George Washington crossed the Delaware at this location and they make a shrine. And it becomes like, you know, a national monument, and people go there and say, oh, George Washington crossed the Delaware here. And, you know, similarly, Gandhi lived in this place. And, you know how it is. So when the person does something, maybe then it's recognized as a place. But when Krishna has already completed his pastime, how do you do that? And the answer is by establishing deities. Because where Krishna is, what goes on? And the same activities that happen in the spiritual world take place when you're worshipping a deity. When you read the pastimes of Krishna, say Krishna comes home from the pasturing ground. What happens? Deity worship. The mother Yashoda and some of the elder ladies, they bathe Krishna. And then they dress Krishna. And then they decorate Krishna. And then they give Krishna a nice garland. And so on. And then They do it again in the morning. It's time for Krishna to get up. Krishna takes his bath. And then it's deity worship again. So as it's done in the spiritual world, we're given the opportunity, very mercifully, we're given the opportunity to do the same thing in the spirit is done in the spiritual world. You can say it's practice. We're preparing ourselves for the spiritual world. And if the worship is done not just according to the rules and regulations, certainly according to rules and regulations, but for the purpose of purification and gradually for the purpose of awakening the natural tendency that exists in the soul in the spiritual world of serving Krishna. Specifically, in the case of deity worship, serving his form. And although the deity form, in this case, very beautiful deities, of marble, or wood, or metal, or according to Hari Bhakti Vilasa, a number of jewels and paint, even in the mind, the deity may take some form in an authorized way, and one can worship Krishna in that way. And according to Rupa Goswami, this is one of the five most potent activities for awakening our love of God. In fact, he says, if any one of these five is done with a small condition, it's without offense. Small condition, without offense. Then, at once, one can awaken love of God. So, if we find ourselves not at once awakening love of God, we know something is wrong. We're making some offense. I want to read what Prabhupada writes in one of the other five primary activities for achieving love of God is Srimad Bhagavatam, where Prabhupada has a nice purport. He's discussing deity worship, the function of deity worship in the life of a devotee. It's in chapter 3 of Canto 2, and chapter 3 has a very nice title, Pure Devotional Service, Change of Heart. The first chapter is the first step in God realization, where Maharaj Parikshit is being advised to form a personal conception of God, if one has none, is to see God within nature. And then after forming a personal conception of God, to see the localized feature of God in the heart, the Lord of the heart, by the process of meditation, that's described. And then progressing from seeing that God exists within the heart, then seeing him before you in his personal form, personal feature. Beginning with hearing and chanting about him, but also worshipping the deity form. So, this is chapter 3, text 22. Nice verse and very amazing purport. Prabhupada translates, the eyes which do not look at the symbolic representations of the personality of Godhead Vishnu are like those printed on the plumes of a peacock. And the legs which do not move to the holy places where the Lord is remembered are considered to be like tree trunks for force. Especially for householder devotees. I see a few. Especially for householder devotees, the path of deity worship is strongly recommended. As far as possible, every householder, by the direction of the spiritual master, must install the deity of Vishnu, forms like Radha Krishna, Lakshmi Narayana, or Sita Ram especially, or any other form of the Lord, like Nrisimha, Varaha, Gornatai, Matsya, Kurma, Shalagram, Shila, and many other forms of Vishnu, like Trivikram, Keshava, Achyuta, Vasudeva, Narayana, and Damodar, are as recommended in the Vaishnava Tantras, or Puranas. Vaishnava Tantras means like Narada Pancharatra, or Tantra is a term that's used to explain the rules or the procedures of rituals. Deity worship is one of them. So, Narada Pancharatra. Narada is an authority on deity worship. And that the text is Narada Pancharatra. So that's a Vaishnava Tantra. Or extracting from Narada Pancharatra and many other sources is our Gaudiya text, Hari Bhakti Vilas. Tomorrow, not only are we going to be observing Mother's Day, but Akshaya Tritiya. I plan to speak about that tomorrow and make reference to Hari Bhakti Vilas. Because it teaches how to. Tantra is like a how to. Like my Dell computer, I needed the keyboard replaced. So they sent the replacement keyboard. And they have a little manual that's supposed to tell you how to take the old one out, put the new one in. It took an hour, I heard. But that's like, you know, it's a tantra. Dell's tantra. The procedure manual. So Vaishnava tantra is how Vaishnavas observe Janmashtami and how one observes the duties of a grihastha and one, the mantras of sannyas and the duties of sannyas and how you marriage ceremonies are performed. And, like, tantra, Vaishnava tantra. As recommended in the Vaishnava tantra or Puranas. So we should do deity worship accordingly. And one's family should worship strictly following the directions and regulations of the Archana Vidhi. Archana means deity worship and Vidhi means the rules of deity worship. Then listen to this sentence. Any member of the family who is above 12 years of age should be initiated by a bona fide spiritual master. So if you're over 12 years old, prepare yourselves. And all the members of the household should be engaged in daily service of the Lord, beginning from 4 a.m. till night, parentheses, 10 p.m. You're not supposed to do anything else, just that. By performing Mangala Arati, Niranjana, Archana, Puja, Kirtan, Shringara, Bhoga, Vaikali, Sandhya Arati, Paka, Bhoga at night, Shayana Arati, etc. Engagement in such deity, in such worship of the deity, under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master, will greatly help the householders to purify their very existence and make rapid progress in spiritual knowledge. Simply theoretical book knowledge is not sufficient for a neophyte devotee. Book knowledge is theoretical, whereas archana, process, is practical. Spiritual knowledge must be developed by a combination of theoretical and practical knowledge. And that is the guaranteed way for attainment of spiritual perfection. The training of devotional service for a neophyte devotee completely depends on the expert spiritual master who knows how to lead his disciple to make gradual progress towards the path back home, back to Godhead. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has defined the bona fide qualities of a spiritual master. And one of the verses in that description reads, Shivigraharadhana nichanana Shingaratam mandiramarjanado Yuktasya bhaktam shaniyunjato ki Vande guru sri charan madarindam. Sri Vigraha is the archa, or suitable worshipable form of the Lord, and the disciple should be engaged in worshipping the deity regularly by Sringara, by proper decorating and dressing, as also by Mandira Marjana, the matter of cleansing the temple. The spiritual master teaches the neophyte devotee all these kindly and personally to help him gradually in the realization of the transcendental name, quality, form, etc. of the Lord. Paragraph. Only attention engaged in the service of the Lord, especially in dressing and decorating the temple, accompanied by musical kirtan and spiritual instructions from scriptures, can save the common man from the hellish cinema attractions and rubbish sex songs broadcast everywhere by radios and so many other media these days. If one is unable to maintain a temple at home, he should go to another temple where all the above performances are regularly executed. Visiting the temple of a devotee and looking at the profusely decorated forms of the Lord, well-dressed, in well-decorated, sanctified temple, naturally infuse the mundane mind with spiritual inspiration. And then he goes into the legs part, the legs that take you to those places. And if you don't use the legs to take you to those places, they're no better than tree trunks, and the eyes that don't see those forms of the Lord are no better than the eyes on a peacock feather. Although eyes on a peacock feather are very attractive. No better. Not real seeing. Many, many things that one can say about deity worship, including just elaborating on what's here. I particularly like when I read this section, it kind of jumps out. Prabhupada speaks of deity worship as a means of helping one to get realization and spiritual knowledge. Maybe that's because we're used to thinking of development of spiritual knowledge as this one. When you read Srimad Bhagavatam, if you want spiritual knowledge. And deity worship is, you know, something else. How is that connected to spiritual knowledge? So Prabhupada explains the connection. Here's a nice theory, or theoretical knowledge, yeah. We're a spirit soul. If you went out, surveys have done this. I specifically remember in the year 2000, they did all kinds of surveys, and one of those surveys was surveying people in America to see how many people, or what percentage of people believe in the soul, and what percentage of people believe in reincarnation. And because it was done out of Princeton, because that's where Professor Gallup did his work. So yeah, that area of the country, but you know, very wide survey. And I don't remember exactly the number, but something like 90% of the population surveyed believe in the soul. And of those, well, of all surveyed, those who believe in reincarnation was almost, it was in the upper 80s, 86, something like 85-86%. Very surprising. In one sense, very surprising. But it's especially surprising due to the fact that people don't live their life that way. How many people live their life that way? Believing in the soul. How much investment is going into the well-being of the soul? Say it differently. We know that the children will get older. So how much time and energy is spent preparing for adult life through education? How many hours? We just think about it. Collectively add up how many hours of those of us assembled here have spent in education. Career-directed education. A lot of hours. Good part of our life towards that end. Okay, so we believe we're going to get old and we're going to need to do something. So we're preparing now for something later. Now what about the soul? besides preparing, just even, you know, just doing. Without elaborating, I don't see so many people living their life with that conviction, although they have that conviction. There's this big gap between theory and practice, is the point. And so, devotional service, deity worship, is in the category of practical. Okay, so we're a spirit soul, and we're part of the Supreme Spirit who can serve Him, so now, here it is. It's a process. It is one of many, but a very formal and authorized process of practical application of our theoretical knowledge. And it's very potent. Like chanting is very potent. It's always very nice when we see a new person begins chanting, because we know it's very potent. Even when, besides a new person beginning to regularly chant, just going on Harinam, Sankirtan, and engaging people in hearing, chanting, I could spend at least an hour describing experiences of persons who, through hearing the chanting of the holy name, their life changed. Just hearing. Just going regularly to a place where we chant the holy name. It's very, very powerful. The associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, their assignment, their mission, was to encourage people to chant the holy name. That was the service given first by Lord Chaitanya to Lord Nityananda and Haridas Thakur. Go out into the public and induce people to chant. Appeal to them. Chant the holy name. That's when we say Hari Bol. That's what it means. I found this out when I visited in the Caribbean. We're not known as the Hare Krishnas. We're known as the Hari Bols. Because, you know, it's a phrase that devotees say all the time, even more than Hare Krishna, like when they greet each other, it's Hare Bol.
In Gujarat, they say
Hare Bol. Well, in Trinidad and Guyana, it's Hare Bols. Going through immigration and I didn't know the address of the temple because they require it. They wouldn't let me, you know, complete the process of immigration without going. He said, "I know you're a Hari Bol, but I need to know the address of the temple where you're going. It's just one of our rules." I said, "Isn't it enough to know that I'm a Hari Bol? I mean, look at me. Where do you think I'm going?" Anyway. So he called over a friend. He said, "You know where the Hari Bols live? They, you know." "Oh yeah, I know the address, but I've been there many times. They have really good food, so I just gave the address." So as chanting is very powerful, deity worship is also a very powerful process for, just as Prabhupada says, for purification. And when there's purification through the chanting of the holy name and purification through deity worship, then both of them, I mean each one of them and both of them combined, they enrich, because of that purification, the potential for us to receive transcendental message, both through the Srimad Bhagavatam in this descending fashion, but also the awakening of transcendental knowledge naturally from within. And the Srimad Bhagavatam teaches us that. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojata Janayati Asho Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yadahaitukam. By devotional service causelessly, detachment from other things and transcendental knowledge awaken within the heart, just from devotional service. So maybe you're a good reader, and maybe you're not a good reader. Chant the name and engage in deity worship. And read Srimad Bhagavatam anyway. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu found one Brahmin in Sri Rangam. Many of you know the story from Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he saw every day this Brahmin was sitting there with his Srimad Bhagavatam, and he was just crying profusely. So one day he went to the Brahmin and asked him, "My dear Brahmin, what is it that you're reading that's causing you to feel such emotion?" And the Brahmin was used to being teased by other Brahmins. He said, "So why are you teasing me like this? You're an elevated personality." "You're not teasing, I'm just asking you why these feelings are there." He said, "Well, I can't tell you the subject matter because I'm illiterate. And my spiritual, even though he knew I'm illiterate, I'm not proficient at reading, he still told me to read the entire Bhagavad Gita every day. So on the order of the spiritual master, I try to read Bhagavad Gita every day. But I'm illiterate, so I just mumble the words and I really don't know what the words are saying because I'm illiterate." Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him, "Why is it are you crying like this?" "It's because I'm thinking of how merciful is Krishna. How kind is Krishna. Because Arjuna is so dear to him, his own devotee, Krishna, the Supreme Lord, becomes the chariot driver of his devotee. And when I think of the love that Krishna has for Arjuna, how much love, how much compassion, how much affection he has, I begin to cry." So Lord Chaitanya embraced him and said, you're the true scholar of Bhagavad Gita. So this deity worship helps in becoming purified. And when one becomes purified, then the capacity for transcendental knowledge naturally awakens from within and from without. Just a few things also about deity worship, as one of them mentioned here. Prabhupada is referring to the verse by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, "Sri Vigrahara Dhana Nityanana Shringara Tan Mandira Marjanado." These two things are mentioned, decoration and cleaning. So cleansing mandira marjana, cleansing of the temple, means when you invite a deity into your home, where is our host and hostess? Some practical instruction here. Oh, she's way over there. Way over there.
Yes.
Okay. You relay the message to your good wife. She's coming. Okay. Just practical instruction here. Mandira Marjana. Marjana means cleansing. Mandira means temple. So when you invite the deity to your home becomes the temple. Like establishing places of pastimes of Krishna. This becomes one of them because Krishna is residing, and where Krishna resides, he presides. He's like, "It used to be your house." Now it's his house. Your name may be on the deed, but your consciousness should be, "This is Krishna's house. I'm an occupant. I'm maybe managing the affairs of Krishna's house, but it's Krishna's house. And the place where Krishna resides must be very clean." I mean, looking around, you probably keep things very clean. Now you ramp it up a little bit. Extra clean. Serious. Prabhupada used the term summit cleanliness. Our temples should be known for their summit cleanliness. It's a little difficult when you have 130 children running around in Sunday school to keep the place clean. But still, then after the kids make a mess, the place becomes very clean. And not only the temple room, but the house, but especially the temple room. And the children should learn, be trained, when in the temple room, very clean. Don't leave things lying around. It's very, very clean, very clean. And then when approaching the deity, you want your children to be engaged in worship of the deity. They need to be trained by your good example and your words that this is very sacred. So, you know, as soon as you start doing, they're going to want to do. You're ringing the bell, they're going to want to ring the bell. You're offering the incense, they're going to want to offer the incense. They want to, you know, take over your job. But that's okay. The enthusiasm of the children is good. But, you know, the respect and the sense of awe and reverence and clean. So you set the standard, and by doing so, you'll train your children. And they'll come to, when they enter the temple room and leave the temple room, it's not just like, you know, run. It's pay obeisances and pay, just like in the temple. Now, our guests that come into the temple at the temple room at the temple, they may not know. But if the devotees who are trained know, and they do, then slowly, hopefully, the newer devotees will start to understand this. When you enter the, come before the Krishna, you pay obeisances. I'll just tell a little, I wish I could find the recording, but once upon a time I heard a recording. I listened to it 50 times, and one day I'll find it, where Prabhupada is describing what a householder should do in their daily routine when they have a deity in their home. Would you like to hear that one? Because he was, as you know, Prabhupada was a householder, and he had deities. He had deities from when he was a child, because he saw his father worshipping Radha Krishna, so he wanted to worship Radha Krishna. And his father didn't right away, okay, here's a deity, but he saw he was sincere, and so he arranged for a deity. And the deity, the way Prabhupada described it, was a doll. It wasn't like, you know, we make these little stuffed dolls made of cloth and like cotton inside. Not that. But it was a regular brass deity. But Prabhupada understood, this is just practice. Not like my father. It's so that he had, anyway, had his own altar. But as a householder, he had deities. He was trained by his father. So when he became a householder, he had deities. And he described, so in the morning, time to rise. And the first thing, Prabhupada said, you speak the name of your deity and pay obeisances to your spiritual master. And then he described, make the body clean. Take bath, brush teeth, all those things. Then, fresh cloth. So now the body is clean, now make the inside clean. Then you describe, you go to the deity room and you make a sound, ring a bell or you knock, just like if it's somebody's room. If you can just walk into somebody's room, you make a sound. And then you enter the room. And then Prabhupada described the first thing when entering the deity room is make the altar clean. Although you didn't leave it dirty, first thing, make it clean. This is Brahminical standard. And while doing so, prayers. Perhaps standard prayers that you like or something. And then the basic worship that you do. And then you chant the holy name. And at a certain point, you make an offering to the deity. but that which you're going to take as the prasad of the deity, and you then make the offering to the deity. And then have your morning meal and then go to work or carry out the activities for the day. That was like a basic structure. Then he described that part of the day where you, the fruits of your activity are then spent for the deity. You go to the marketplace to buy, and the consciousness is, this is, I want to purchase something very nice because it's going to be offered to Krishna. So it's the same activity, it's just the consciousness behind it is different. Instead of thinking, my son likes this kind of fruit or vegetable, or something like that, you're thinking, what is nice for Krishna? And I want the best quality because it's for Krishna. In that way, you're thinking about there's a pleasure of the deity, and then you bring the item home, and you wash it very carefully because it's going to be used in service to Krishna. Prepare it very nicely because it's going to be used in service of Krishna. And then you do the cooking and make the offering like that we described. And then in the evening, the family comes together, again become clean, come before the deity. Some activity that where the deity is at the center, a short kirtan, something. He didn't elaborate. But in family, some little activity that's done together where Krishna is at the center, morning and evening. Because you invited Krishna, when you invite the deity form, here it's being said, all householders must, and then when you invite Krishna, it's even more serious or more significant than children. For mother and father to have children, big responsibility. But after some time, normally, children grow up. And eventually the children become independent and less dependent upon you. And then they're off on their own, living their adult life. But the deity doesn't grow up and eventually get married and go get another house somewhere. It's like having a child for the rest of your life. And in one sense, they're dependent. In another sense, we're dependent. We're placing ourselves in that position of dependency upon them. And it's a long-term commitment that everyone must do at the same time. It should be done soberly, with the proper standards. And so, a little bit about home standards versus temple standards. In short, they're not the same. But minimum for home standards, rather than say like, okay, here's the minimum standard for home deity worship. Just a principle is, whatever cleanliness is essential, and regularity is essential, and sincerity is essential. So regularity means whatever it is that you do. And in discussion with your pujaris here in Seattle and so forth, what's the standard that you can do every day? And then you do that every day. And you may do extra things. It's Janmashtami or Bor Purnima or something, and you may do something extra. And that's extra is nice. But there's something that's minimum, you do regularly, really regularly. And if you have to go somewhere, then you can entrust your deities to someone that will do that regularly, like an extended vacation or something. Just your marble deities, you're not going to take them with you when you go. One standard, I don't want to go too much into this, especially because of time, but traditionally, in some cases this is done, following the tradition, that a shalagram shila is also worshipped along with the deity, and when you travel you take shalagram with you when you worship your deity through worshipping shalagram. Maybe some families have that idea one day to do. That's a possibility. But the continuation of the worship of the deity should be done as far as possible. And so, regulation. There are sometimes, like there's a big festival. So let's say it's a Janmashtami festival, and you're up till midnight, and then afterwards doing something, and you come back home, and, you know, then you have Schedule B. The Schedule A when it's not Janmashtami night. So you go to Schedule B. But then, otherwise, as far as possible, keep Schedule A. Say, at least within a time frame, and at a fixed time. At least within a fixed range of time. Something that you offer some worship. The children can bring water, change the water of the deity every day. Empty, wash, fresh water, put the cup, the cover on the cup. That's something that children can get into and not mess up so much. Some simple thing. But regularly. Then it becomes, as you do it regularly, it can either become mechanical or it can become very devotional. You anticipate how to make nice garlands, what's the next outfit you'd like to have. So, you know, your mind goes to thinking of decorating and serving your deity. It becomes like a relationship. It's a relationship that you develop with Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, in this case, Purnatai. And you become attached, and they also become attached to you. And it's nice. Like, real nice. And one last thing, out of so many other things that could be said, kirtan is very important in deity worship. Jiva Goswami writes it in his Sandarbhas, and practical experience shows. It's part of deity worship. Let's say the children or somebody besides children, the big children, do kirtan in a temple room. It can be, you know, like a show, but that's not best. What's best is the mood of, because somebody was writing a letter to me about this, you know, what's the right mood for developing my chanting kirtan ability? And the mood is for the pleasure of Krishna, especially when you're before your deity, for the pleasure of your deity. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada did like this. I observed in the evening, before he took rest, like about 10 minutes to 9, up till 9 o'clock, he went into the front room. This was in the Henry Street Temple in New York. And he sat with the harmonium. He had a little altar, and he would just sing. Now, he would sing for the pleasure of the deity, and he would do just different bhajans. I only know because I was watching from the window, so I don't even know exactly what he was singing. But he just, you know, he absorbed himself and transcendental sound vibration for the pleasure of the deity. And they would do that for 10-15 minutes every night, very regulated. And then he would go to his room and the light would go out. I don't know what happened after that. So, aside from when, it's part of, important part of deity worship. It's there for their pleasure, it's not for our pleasure. For their pleasure. And when doing things in that mood for their pleasure, that's bhakti. It brings a happiness unlike any other kind of happiness. Learning a new melody or singing something. It's very nice. Throw some thoughts on being worship. Hare Krishna. Shiva Prabhupada. Sure.
So what about DVDs
that you have inherited from the families before? What about them?
So,
are
you
a
part of the Pancharaj
Trivedi? Sure. You have a different idea? I mean, I don't know why you're asking the question. Maybe I could ask you why you're asking.
DVDs that have come
I understand this, the context. So what the question is, should you worship him according to Gaudiya standards? Yeah. There are different vidhis for different sampradayas, or different family traditions may have different standards. Like, let's take Lord Jagannath. I mean, it's probably not the deity, but in Puri, they worship by a certain standard. Within ISKCON, Prabhupada gave us the same standard as, you know, any other deity, not we follow the standards as taken up in Puri. So, you may inherit some deity and they were worshipped by whatever family tradition standards or who knows what. And now you've received them. So you worship them according to our Arjuna Vidhis. Understanding that the deity is Vishnu or Krishna or Shalagram or whatever. And these are standards by which the Lord is pleased. And we're following that line. So we're safe and we're sure. They're pleased. We're following these Vidhis.
And what if the descendants marry off and go somewhere else and then there's nobody to take care of the deities after death?
You're saying, you know, what if your son doesn't follow Krishna consciousness or something like that? Well, you got to make sure he'll follow. You're so diligent. And he's not averse. So, if that happens, my recommendation would be find someone who will properly worship them. So it may break the tradition of family, which is so there's two principles: family and what's pleasing to Krishna. You put the what's pleasing to Krishna in the priority position over the family tradition. And may your ancestors and forefathers be pleased, because Krishna is pleased. Anything else? Okay. So let's have RT.
Can I just make a quick announcement?
Sure, why not?
Two things. Next month, 14th through 16th of June, we have a Japa retreat with Maharaj. This is our 5th year. And it's a very nice place where children and family would really enjoy, including the parents. Good facility to stay. If you are yet to register, please contact us, me or Amitabh. It's very reasonable. We are charging $65 for all these years, for 3 nights or 4 nights. I mean, 3 nights straight, lunch, breakfast, dinner, everything, prasadam. So, wonderful way to increase your potency of chanting. And second thing, there was a little boo-boo done by us, me and him, in our flyer about the address of Yashoda Dulal Brahman Krishnamayi's house tomorrow morning program. So, please check the right address. That's email has gone out. Our Prabhuji is right here. Also, the timing, there was some confusion the way we designed it. It's not at 7 o'clock, it's going to be at 10 o'clock. So the program will start sharp at 10 o'clock tomorrow. Hare Krishna.
One more thing is, Japa retreat, the retreat place is quite far from this place, so you cannot travel during the daytime. So please make sure that you have to stay there in order to make it. Like last year it was like 80 miles, so it will be easy to travel. This year it is a little far.
It's remote place, like there's no store, nothing nearby. It's a wonderful place. You can see the Puget Sound. And also we are requesting everybody to come on a Thursday night. That was a Friday morning. We're going to start at 7 o'clock this time.
And if you don't come on Thursday night, we're going to start Friday morning anyway.
In fact, would you allow me to say, Maharaj? I mean, I would say that if you cannot come on a Friday, then just stay home and chant on a Saturday. Because what's happening is that people who have not gone through their training on a Friday or not attended, Saturday becomes a little difficult for them to just start chanting.
I wouldn't agree with that.
You?
I would not. Okay. I would certainly recommend preparation before jumping in the pool. But some people have, just by the atmosphere that's generated by others who have been preparing, they just it's not ideal. But it can be very beneficial if someone, for some reason in their job, some responsibility, something, and they can't take Friday off. I wouldn't say, don't come on Saturday. It's a long drive. And it's remote and quiet and peaceful and, you know, nice accommodation and much better for the kids also. It's like all around triple good. That you can only come Saturday. I would say stay home. Sorry. Yeah. Try to get Friday off. And people, from my experience with the program here in Seattle, a number of people who were kind of just beginning chanting, they received so much benefit from this experience. And those that are experienced, depending upon, you know, there's hills and valleys in chanting the holy name. But sometimes it's a very, very powerful boost, qualitative, for those who are regular practitioners of chanting. Okay. So we'll have RT. See the profile. Can you see it? Thank you.